The project that I proposed at least was unsupervised compound splitting with word embeddings, and it's mostly been me and Anton working on this, so we made a bit of progress, but we didn't entirely finish it, of course. So just to wrap up a bit, we were doing compound splitting, and we were seeing if those regularities in the semantic vector space that we've just seen in this talk, which worked well for morphology, whether they also work for compounds. And we found that for German English, that actually works fairly well. So far we had kind of good machine translation results, and also intrinsic evaluation was positive. But now we wanted to extend a bit. So the first thing that we looked into was, okay, so far we only did one best prediction for the whole compound basically, but we can actually go beyond that. So here you see a German word, Weihnachtsgeschenk, and you can split it in multiple ways. So this is the actual output that our word embedding space compound splitter gives us. And you see that there are two numbers on each node. So the one on the top is basically, we don't do any split, we just keep the word as it is. And then the other ones are, we do two splits, Weihnachts, which means Christmas, and Geschenk, present, or Weih, which is something that you use in church, Nacht, which means night, and then Geschenk. And the two numbers are the same numbers as for the morphology. So the first one is, if you rank the words by cosine similarity, which rank is this word in? So this is just the rank, like lower the better. And the other one is the cosine value. So now if we want to decide one best path, we have to have some way of kind of weighing those features, or whatever they are, against each other, and then deciding which one will be the best one. So In our project, we decided that we would do two things, basically. First thing would be, we just take this lattice, we take the scores that it has, and we just put it directly into the MT decoder, which has been done in the past for the CDEC compound splitter and worked quite well. And then we also need to have a way of deciding those thresholds, because in the previous paper, you've already also seen that they use 0.5 and 100, which is kind of, I mean, you can try a few, but that's not really motivated. So we want to have a better way of estimating those. So again, each split has these two cosine and rank features. And to also have weight for those, because one of them might be better than the other, we decided to do the following. We basically just take this lattice, and we define four features for every for every split in this lattice. One is the cosine, one is the rank, one is whether this is no compound split at all, because sometimes you just want to keep the word as it is. And the other one is the split penalty, because if you do 10 splits, that's probably very unlikely, so you basically just want to keep the number of splits to a minimum level. So what we decided to do was to use a structured perceptron, so we basically just take this lattice, we take as the target function whether the whole compound is correct. We have some gold data for German, where we can estimate it. And then we can do two things. For the first test, we just do Viterbi through this lattice to get first the best split. And if we want to pass the lattice to the T system, we score it using our perceptron weights and pass it on. And if we don't have gold data to do this, we could either get it from the EMT system directly using some weights, or we could just use the German weights. We'll try to see which one works best for the other languages. And that's it.
So I'll be quite short. So to recap the idea that we had, there's a discriminative classifier currently available in MOSES and several feature functions that are already implemented, but they're all focusing on features from the source sentence. So we're trying to also add document level features from the source document. And so progress has been quite slow. Been discussing some potential features. We're starting with very simple ones, bag of words from the dialogue history within a particular window, or a simplified version of the DADOC act for the previous sentence. It's, I'm focusing on conversational data. And we're feeding the feature values using the tap sentence format in Moses. So on, currently we're using classical source features. We would like also to add label dependent features as well, but it's not yet done. And we're still evaluating. So it's still running. That's it.
So, we are still trying to put MD capabilities into NLTK, so nobody knows what NLTK is. Speak to me or any of the people in the team, and we'll tell you how fun it is. What we've done is we've set up Git, Python, and pip for everybody. It's not by default on everybody's system because not everybody likes Python. And you can see the Google shortened link to see what we've done and what we're going to do. So the goal is actually to improve the educational aspect of machine translation inside NMTK because it's strict kind of control of code review. And also, at some point, we want to wrap Moses and wrap everything else that comes with Moses and friends. The team is, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of us here, and then there's 3 remotely somewhere else around the world. So Petra, who is not here today, has finished adding a maximum length to the phrase extraction that's already in NLTK. Anna, who has set up NLTK in Windows, it's not an easy thing because Python hates Windows for some good reason. It's really hard, actually. And Frank is working on the pipelining of the IBM models to the joint alignments and the phrase extraction. Federico has been implementing the probabilities. There's numbers output, but the numbers are not the right ones, so we are trying to debug what's wrong with the smoothing. I have been just messing around with the reordering and then preparing the data for the phrase extraction because now we only have like some dog tests of examples and it's just not a realistic test. And remotely, there's 3 other people working with us. It's Xing. He's adding the non-breakable prefix that Moses uses for tokenization into NLTK. Tawei is actually working on, he has finished already, the IBM models from 1 to 5, so you can use IBM models in NLTK. He's trying to recreate the decoder in some sense in NLTK, and also trying to write a new language model implementation that has already been there, but it needs to be improved. So Stephen Bird, the creator, is remotely doing code reviews and reading our code somehow. Yeah. So it's still not too late to join us. There's still many things to patch. Yeah, it's open source stuff. So
thanks.
Okay, so our project was motivated by the hope that there may be very high quality bytext online and hidden in PDFs. So. We did some steps. We tried to find some candidates without actually downloading all the PDFs. So we started with a list of PDFs, PDF links that we collected from Common Crawl, and it was like 300 million links, and we don't really want to download all these PDFs. It takes a while. So we were looking if we can find some candidate pairings that would look nice, and something like that would be if the URL is looking similar or the file name is looking very similar, or maybe they're both linked from the same page, and one says English and one says Spanish or so. So we're looking into these things, but we also want to progress very fast so we can quickly have some pipeline set up and then just improve all the individual steps. So what we did is we just started with looking at the URL, and we just stripped all these language bits. So for example, that on the right would be like 3 possible URLs, and we actually find quite a few of these, and we would just strip out all the language identifying bits in there and then end up with a common key. And whenever there's several URLs that map to the same key and we see that the URL suggests that they are in different languages, we take that as a candidate pair. And that worked fairly well. So for English-French, we get like 550,000 candidates. For German, we have 300,000 candidate pairs, actually. For Italian, it's 100,000, for Russian as well. So that is a big enough amount to have some reasonable buy text. But of course, it breaks. So this is, for example, a PDF link from the same page, but it's not even sitting on the same host, and the file names are similar but different, and very hard to find a good tokenization for this, and it doesn't say the language in the in both file names. Only one file name says German, so this is kind of the long tail that we also try to get a bit of, because it's probably a heavy tail of parallel PDFs. A thing that we had anticipated, but that didn't surface so far, is finding a massive number of, say, VCR manuals from the past that were translated. But apparently, that there's just very many sites that have some small announcements in two languages. The next hard step is extracting text. So the standard tool for this is PDF to text, of course. There's also PDF to text with a number two. And various other tools. They usually just strip out the strings from the PDF, and that is very annoying. But luckily, Jörg Tiedemann has done all the work for us and is post-processing the output of Tika and PDF to text and various other tools, and applying heuristics to get broken encoding out and join sentences. You can see here that there's spurious sentence line breaks that are just due to the formatting in the PDF, and we don't want that. So there's some heuristics in joining the sentences, and as you can see in the bold text at the beginning here, there's actually overjoining. So the thing that is supposed to be the headline of this article ends up to be joined with the text, but I think we can live with that. If it's the same in both languages, that's still a good alignment. We're trying, so that's the step we're at now. We're trying different sentence alignment tools to see what works best. They all probably work quite similarly, as we can see from previous evaluations. And then later this week, I present a very high number for X. Thanks.
Excellent. You're the last, okay.
So, hi. At the beginning, this was the most... most people signed up for this project, but it scared the people out and no one came for the meeting. So, if any of you are doesn't have any project or want to join, you still are welcome. I still need someone to help me with implementation in Python, but also someone for creating data sets, or if someone is just interested in the method that Keith was presenting today, just came and see me later. And the progress is one third of the implementation is done, and I'll try English and Czech, and if it'll be time, more languages, or if anyone will want to try some other languages, you're welcome. So I'll be probably in this room the whole day today, so you can see me.
So remember, it's still Wednesday only, and the final report is due Friday, due Saturday, so you have still plenty of time to join and do something useful. Yeah. Okay, so the next... so do you have any in the SVN? Okay. So then... Oh, okay. So let's do one by one, or whoever is here. Downloading, save, and now compile.
Okay. So this is the team for MT Compare Eval, and we have somehow joined with Mark Mitak, and I think no one has joined the team for Translate 5, but one of the goals was to integrate those two tools somehow, so let's say we have joined the two projects, and we have already some of the goals done, so we have designed, or actually Ondřej has designed an API for uploading translations to CompareEval via post request. So this can be used either for the integration with Translate 5 or any other tool. Actually, this integration, I think it's still in progress. Some plugin improvement needs to be done on the Translate 5 side. But we have used the API also for uploading the translation via the web interface. So if you now check out the CompareEval from GitHub master branch, there will be a button and you can upload the translation yourself and you can run it as a public server. And also, it was just we wanted to switch from SQLite to MySQL, so loading the translation is faster. I'm not sure, Roman, if it's... I hope it's already done by now, but it shouldn't be a big problem. And we still want to finish some goals by Friday, so adding more metrics or at least a support for external metrics. So if you have your metric as meter implemented in Java or some binary script, then you can set up, configure CompareEval, and it will compute this metric and report it in the table. I would like to have also a better engram statistics, and this would be probably a topic for a new paper to some journal or conference. So if you are interested in this, we need especially MT developers who would like suggest us which kind of statistic of the overall engrams are useful for them. So even if you don't have time for really implementing this, but you would just like to use the tool, please come to us. We are usually in S11 next room and talk to us. And we would like to have a better configuration so the case sensitive or insensitive blue score can be, both of them are already implemented, but only one of them is shown on the main screen. It should be more configurable. And there are many more goals, but I'm not sure if we will.
Okay, yeah, the Docker team is a small team, 3 people only, but we've actually made good progress. So Docker turns out to be very nice to use. So basically, you just install Docker. You run docker run minus I minus T, so you get a terminal in the bash. You install your software. Then you just say docker commit, your container name and the image name, and then you can actually run the thing. So we basically now we can run the Moses server in a Docker pod. And what we're going to be working on next is that we write a little web page with JavaScript that provides a little web translation interface by querying the Moses server on the pod. So the idea would be then you can actually install the Docker pod on a Windows machine or a Mac machine. You don't have to worry about compiling it, building the system. You can just download the image and have a ready-to-use machine translation system.
Hi, this is the same slide you saw earlier. The motivation is we want to have this RAM, which is kind of like a distributed system just sitting on the same board, and we want the CPU to, say, query a bunch of stuff from RAM beforehand. And it turns out it works. If you that this graph is showing hash tables, and the size of the hash table in bytes and the number of entries in the hash table is proportional to the size in bytes in each case. And we queried the hash table, so the y-axis is the number of seconds it takes to do a lookup in it. And once you can see this giant increase in the amount of lookup time, and that's exiting the CPU's cache. But if you issue prefetch instructions, beforehand, and we had a rolling series of four queries going on at once. So you prefetch, do another query with the prefetch, and then have that in a circular buffer of size 4 in this case. So there's 4 in flight at a time. Then you get much faster when it's out of the CPU cache, which is the dominant case for language models. So we haven't done anything above, let's make a faster hash table query program, but on top of that, we intend to implement the changes to the language models necessary to do pipelining, and ultimately we'll have to change the decoder so it's tolerant to pipelining as well. And that's the next slide.
Okay, yeah. Report from the trenches on refactoring the phrase table lookup. So Michael and I spend a lot of time looking at the code, scratching our head and going, oh dear. Oh, okay. Where does that lead? Anyway, so we decided to cut it down a little bit. I'll be working a little bit on eliminating the global phrase length limit. That's closely related to my suffix array phrase table because there is no phrase limit in that. So the idea would be if a sentence is actually in our database that we want to translate, why not just return the whole sentence or return really long matches? And right now that's limited by the phrase length limit that you have to impose. You can make it really, really long, yes, but that actually has repercussions on the performance because the Moses right now pre-generates all the lookups. So if you have a very long phrase length, it actually will look up a lot of things that it will never find. So that the idea is to kind of eliminate that and be more productive with that. And Michael is working on parallelizing the phrase table lookup.
So do you, can we show the slide, or does it, or, you, okay, but in the meantime, I suggest it.
So Rust language, have one participant. And I promised guaranteed memory safety and no seg faults. And Tomasz wrote a simple script that joins two files with three vertical bars together. And he didn't have to do any memory management. There's no garbage collection. And there are no memory leaks and no seg faults so far. And I'm using this script in my next project. So my other project was interactive management system. So the idea is you have these tools and you can just drag and drop them. So here I have a Opus tool. Maybe you know Opus, the opera library, and there's European Constitution. And you could, in theory, input the corpus name and the languages, and it will automatically download it and extract it. Then you can just add other tools like Tokenizer, and then join them. And it's going to create a makefile, or it could create Green Engine commands. So I have a little demo that trains a complete machine translation system. So I'm using this Opus European Constitution. I'm tokenizing it, running fast lines, symmetrizing. using KNLM and binarizing the language model, extracting phrases, and then I'm translating them with Moses. You can see that I have the phrase table, language model, and input. And I de-tokenize and I evaluate blue. And so I have here the makefile, which I'm going to try to run. And it should take about 2 minutes. It's about 10,000 sentences. And I'm using one of the scripts written by Tomas in Rust. Everything is in a slash tools directory, just Moses tools and Fastline. Just 30 more seconds.
Hopefully.
So the idea is that now I'm using phrase extraction, but in future I could have a tool that I could just drag and drop Ulrich's suffix arrays instead of extracting phrases. And the system is finished. I had one, I'm translating one sentence, European Parliament, and I'm expecting this text. And I have a blue of 0.45. I have all the files here. They're also automatically generated. So what we are going to do next is maybe have a run button here. So you can click run. It's going to execute the make file and you'll see progress here. So this would be bright green if it's running, red if it failed, or we could also maybe click on these output files and see them in the browser instead of having to use the shell. So that's it for now.
So yeah, we have one more presentation in the SVN. Oops, I just closed that. Okay, I know. So midweek reports, and yours is multipass.
Right. This project is with three other people. It's about multipass decoding, or not, as I'll tell you about. So, what is multipass decoding? So, right. So, when you have in a decoding, when you have a partial translation, you need to score the translation. So, you score translations with the phrase tables that has some scores, and the language models has a score, and the phrase word count is a score. So in Moses and in Joshua, those scores are all done in one go, in one single pass. When you have the translation, it's all scored together. But sometimes what you want to do is that you want to score the easy stuff with the easy feature functions, and then leave the difficult feature functions, like the language models, to the second pass. And that is what multipass is. So in the first pass, what happens is that you score with the easy functions, and you create an output lattice, like the picture. And then in the second pass, you're given the feature functions are given the output lattice, and they say, okay, what I'm going to score the lines, the edges on this. So why would you use multipass? So, you want to use multi-pass decoding when you have feature functions which are resources intensive. That may take a long time to run, so you want to actually batch it up. These feature functions are like language models, neural networks, language models, like what Kevin has told you about, large order language models. You want to use coarse-defined feature functions. Or you want to do things like desegmentation. So you have a lattice which is in, which has morphology, morphemes, and then you want to actually change the lattice so that it actually has words, then score with a language model. So this is what we started out looking at. And we thought about it and thought about it. And we thought, well, we are all interested in neural network language models, but there are a dime a dozen these days. Like they're so popular, even Google are doing it. So we'll try to do something else. So we picked on the desegmentation. So desegmentation would be really useful for highly agglutinative languages such as Finnish, Turkish, so that where you don't actually necessarily have the output target words, but you actually have the morpheme. So we're gonna. I'll tell you a little bit about that. So, so this is Arabic. So you have on the left-hand side you have the lattice, and the lattice has the morphemes of the output words, and you want to desegment the lattice so you're going to concatenate the translation so that it actually becomes. Words in the target. So the left-hand side have morphemes, and whereas the right-hand side have words in the target. And then you score that with the language model. So that's lattice desegmentation. So we're not going to do lattice anymore. So what we're doing now is that we're going to actually write a specific language model which is aware of morphemes, and that's what my teammates are going to tell you about.
Okay, so we're working on a segment-aware language model. So pretty much if you have something that's been segmented, like FAST and ER, you want to combine them into FASTER. And the best systems for these morphologically rich languages often combine after decoding. So they do the coding over morphemes and then combine them, desegment them after. But we're interested in what happens if we actually do this in the decoder. So it'd be good to have these scores over whole words, just not segments. We're still going to keep the scores over words as a different feature. But we want to combine them together. However, it opens up a few different sort of issues and kind of probabilities. So now you have to go over multiple states in the decoder, as you saw in the previous one, you're trying to combine these. So now we're looking at, well, okay, we need to be taking words that could be variable length. You could have a morpheme that's an entire word, or you could have 15 morphemes, or, well, probably not that many, but like 4 or 5 morphemes in a single word together. So these are multiple states, so we have to look through states, and actually, asked a bunch of other questions about, how do you score when you're partially through a word? If you have 2 morphemes that have been combined, do you use the average of what the word is, the rest? So these are all different things that we're going to look at and play around with different experiments. Okay. And so what we've done already is we've changed the approach to this language model-based approach, and we've implemented a simple try for the language model. We're just a simple data structure for that. We're going to make that not so simple in the future and binarize it and make it fast. And then we're working on getting this actually integrated into Moses.
Thanks. So are there any further PDFs?
So for appraise, we actually consider switching the evaluation task we run for next year's WMT. We're getting closer to having something you can test this week, and then we'll have to bash our heads and figure out if we can actually roll that out and use it, but it's getting there. So expect to have something testable later today, so hopefully we can announce it tonight, tomorrow, and then if you have a couple minutes to spare, you can just try the new interface and we collect some data and then you help us figuring out if this is the right approach.
So anybody else would like to present anything?
Something interesting paper, so you can take it for free, for example.
And we also have our books. If you want, so if you want even something heavier in your backpack, then talk to us and we'll give you some books for free. So I think we're all set. We have still 40 minutes before we can head off for the lunch. So unless you have any questions, even for like the evenings or whatever, then just keep working on your projects. Thanks a lot for the presentations. Good work done, and I'll speak to you throughout the week, throughout the rest of the week.